Major funding for On Point is provided by Liberty Mutual for all your auto, home, life, and business insurance needs. Liberty Mutual. Responsibility. What's your policy?
From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. 20 years ago in Los Angeles, police were caught on videotape beating a man on the side of the freeway. It was rare to see then. It was explosive. There were riots over the Rodney King beating. 53 people died. Today, it doesn't take a big old video camera. Anybody with a cell phone can capture, can record police at work. And Americans are doing just that, often when they think something is wrong. But police don't like it. They're pushing back, sometimes hard, taking cell phones, making arrests. Here, a New Haven, Connecticut officer forces a bystander to hand over his camera.
I was taking a picture.
You don't take pictures of us. How's that? How do you shut this off?
But is it, should it be, illegal for a citizen to videotape the police? This hour, On Point, filming the police at work. You can join the conversation. Should a cell phone camera-toting bystander be arrested for filming the police at work? Is that a First Amendment right? Do police need protection from citizen cameras? You can comment at our website, onpointradio.org, or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. Joining me first today from Nashville is Radley Balco, senior writer for the Huffington Post. He's written extensively on videotaping and law enforcement. Radley Balco, thanks very much for being with us.
Great to be here, Tom.
You're writing most recently, pretty recently, about the war on cameras. What's going on?
Well, there are a few things going on. First, I think we've seen personal technology has advanced to the point where everybody now has a camera and a voice recorder in their pocket. And this is enabling citizens to present an alternative narrative to interactions with police. In the past, it's always been the police narrative that was sort of given deference by courts and prosecutors. What we've seen in response is a lot of police officers aren't particularly happy about this. And so we've seen a lot of arrests over the last few years across the country. There are a couple ways that these arrests happen. First, there are 12 states that require all parties to a conversation to consent before that conversation can be recorded. But 10 of those states actually have an expectation of privacy provision in their law. In other words, the offended party has to have had a reasonable expectation that the conversation was going to be private. And the courts have uniformly held that police officers on the job don't have that sort of expectation of privacy. Now, those arrests are happening in those 12 states anyway, but they usually don't hold up in court. There are two states, Massachusetts and Illinois, that don't have this expectation of privacy. And the Massachusetts Supreme Court has actually upheld convictions of people who have surreptitiously recorded police officers, although the lower courts in the state have generally thrown out charges against people who openly record them. The final state is Illinois, which in 94, the legislature passed a law explicitly taking out this expectation of privacy provision. And there we're seeing lots and lots of arrests and people being charged with felonies for recording police officers, including even people who legitimately thought that police officers were doing them wrong personally. And it's actually a class one felony in Illinois to do this. It's wow. The same class of crimes as rape, actually. So some of these people are facing, 4 to 15 years in prison for each count.
But even where it's not a class one felony, we see this tension over the cameras. Mm-hmm. I mean, police just don't like it. And you're talking about, cameras being taken or smashed or, you name it, whether or not there's actually an arrest. And some of these arrests with very big charges attached and potentially years in prison. If you stick with us for a second here, Radley, I want to go back 20 years to the Rodney King incident, because at that time, cell phones with cameras didn't exist. Video cameras were, there were plenty of them, but the odds of them being there when something was going on was much lower. But then there came that amazing beating, police beating of King, one of the first caught on tape events of police misconduct. And here's the local news showing that infamous video recording, Rodney King being beaten for the first time 20 years ago.
Witnesses to the controversial beating of a black motorist by Los Angeles police were at odds today on what precipitated the confrontation, recorded in part on this home video. Police officers involved in the stick-swinging incident contend that the man, 25-year-old Rodney King, a convicted robber on parole, ignored their orders and refused to be handcuffed after he was stopped for speeding.
And you could see that grainy video all over American televisions of the nightsticks going up in the air, the kicking, the man getting the beating, and soon L.A. had its big riot. 53 dead in those riots, big part of the city, ransacked and in trouble after that happened. Now, Radley, I want to ask you about the kind of thing going on today. That's 20 years ago. Look at Memorial Day, Miami Beach, and here's the story of a guy and his girlfriend, and they're driving home late at night on Memorial Day. They see police and the shooting going on, Nars Benoit pulls out his cell phone and starts taping this. He's very close to it. And then he's quoted here telling CNN, "When the police noticed me recording, one of the officers jumped in the truck, put a pistol to my head, my phone was smashed, he stepped on it, handcuffed me." And here's sound of Mr. Benoit, in a brief clip of what he was filming that evening.
"They done killed this man, oh my God. They done killed this man. Oh my God, he got to be dead now. He's dead now.
You hear the volume of that gunfire, Radley Balco. That's incredible. Now, I don't know all the details of what was going on with that guy who was apparently fleeing the police, and the police, a lot of bullets flying there. But here's a citizen who saw it, wondered about it, had his cell phone out, and soon he's got a pistol to his head. He's in handcuffs. What's the law say about this?
Yeah, well, in Florida, it's unquestionably legal to record the police. Now, you can still be arrested, as I think one of our guests will talk about later today. You can still be arrested for sort of vaguer charges about interfering with a police officer or some kind of obstruction charge. But those are kind of catch-all charges. But in Florida, it's absolutely legal to record the police. And I mean, as a journalist, I think it's critical that we be able to. We need to be able to hold, among government officials, police have a very unique sort of responsibility and power in that they can use force, they can use lethal force. And I think it's critical that citizens be able to hold them accountable when possible. As all these arrests are happening, I think there's some interesting analogies to be drawn to what we're seeing in the Middle East with the Arab Spring. We're seeing images from these government crackdowns on protesters being broadcast and beamed all over the world from cell phones. And while we're sort of celebrating that and condemning a lot of these Middle Eastern governments for, trying to cut off citizens and protesters' access to the internet, we have all these arrests going on of U.S. citizens trying to hold armed, government officials accountable. Now, I'm not saying that the U.S. is the same as Iran or Egypt, but I am saying that I think the premise here is the same, which is that we have this personal technology available really for the first time in human history that citizens can instantly sort of share with the world what government officials are doing, armed government officials are doing on the job. And I think it's critical that we preserve the right to be able to do that.
We've got a case right here, cases all over the country. One right here in my backyard a couple of years ago, and a guy named Simon Glick. He's on the Boston Common. He sees an arrest going on. He's filming it. The next thing he knows, he's been arrested and charged with wiretapping or recording without prior notification, with aiding the escape of a prisoner, with disturbing the peace. That in the courts right now. I want to get a police perspective on this. Joining us now from Alexandria, Virginia, is Dennis Slocum, Vice President of the International Union of Police Associations, 32-year veteran of the Los Angeles Sheriff's Department. Dennis Slocum, thank you very much for joining us.
Thanks for having me, Tom.
Give us your perspective on this. You can understand, as a citizen, people think, well, here I am. I'm not breaking the law. I've got my camera. There's something going on. The police work for me. They work for the public. Why shouldn't I, record what's going on? If it's all up and up, if it's all the right way, why not record it?
I don't disagree with you.
So why are police so upset about this, and why have so many arrests been made and cell phones smashed?
Well, I think if you walked out and started videotaping a guy who was fishing out here in the Potomac River, he might take exception to it. We tell our members that if you don't want your mom to see what you're doing on YouTube or on Channel 4 this evening, probably ought not to do it with the proliferation of cell phones and I was in Los Angeles during the Rodney King event.
Mm-hmm.
Fortunately, that was not L.A. County Sheriff's. That was LAPD.
Right.
And, of course, there was no YouTube or any of that, but it changed the nature of police work since. I don't have a problem with people videotaping. For heaven's sakes, we have videotapes in our police vehicles now, and they probably save more officers than they've ever caused any problem with. The problem that I see and the problems we have is when these videotapes are made and they're shown, you may have a 10 or 20 or 30 second vignette of an event,
mm-hmm.
and people tend to rush to judgment based upon, well, two things. One is that little vignette, and then
right.
their lack of knowledge or training or experience to differentiate what they're really seeing.
So you're saying, it would, in effect, you wouldn't really understand what went on because you just caught one glimpse of it.
Correct.
Is that a serious enough problem that American citizens should be arresting for recording police in the act of, let's say, making an arrest?
Well, I personally don't think it's a good idea to arrest somebody that's videotaping you. Now, if I were a police officer in Illinois or Massachusetts and they had a law and it was a felony, I would make the arrest, I expect.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point, and we're talking this hour about the battle over citizens videotaping, capturing on cell phone, police at work, and police pushing back, sometimes pretty hard. Charges, citizens facing prison time when they may have been bystanders who videotape or on their cell phones capture what goes on. When it's taped and gets out there, it makes a pretty big impression. Here, you remember the case, and this was 07, and Senator John Kerry was making a speech at the University of Florida. A 21-year-old student was forcibly removed from the auditorium, and during that struggle to arrest the students, one of the university officers got out his taser. It was all on tape, all on YouTube.
Why are they arresting me? Can someone do something here?
Let me just say,
I'm being arrested.
Because it's a very important question.
What did I do? Get off me! No way! Get off me! Get off me, man! I didn't do anything! Don't tase me, bro!
Don't tase me, bro. It became legend. We've all seen it, but there are many, many that you will not see. In 2009, a priest was arrested by the New Haven, Connecticut police for video recording their alleged harassment of Latino shop owners. Caught on this tape is the exchange between Father Manship and the arresting officer.
Sir, what are you doing? The reason why you have the camera on me?
Yes.
Why is that?
I'm taking a video of what's going on here.
Well, I'll tell you what, I'll look at that camera.
Hmm?
You can hear the tension right there. Charges can follow. Radley Balco joins us from the Huffington Post. He's been following this all over the country. Dennis Slocum is with us. He's with the International Union of Police Associations, 32-year veteran of the L.A. County Sheriff's Department. Joining us right now from Miami is Carlos Miller. He's a multimedia journalist. He's been arrested twice for taking pictures of the police. He writes about the issue on his blog, Photography is Not a Crime. Carlos Miller, thanks very much for joining us.
Thank you, Tom. Thank you for having me.
What have you seen going on? Give us some examples. What's happening?
Well, this is an ongoing issue, and I mean, I only write about a handful of what's really going on out there, and what we really don't see is people who take pictures of cops or shoot videos of cops, and they're intimidated into turning off their cameras. And in the videos or in the audio you just showed, you can hear the intimidation factor. And a lot of times the ones I show are the people who don't back down. They're the ones, no, I have my right to record you. And they're the ones that end up on YouTube and they end up on my blog. But you have so many people who say, well, I apologize. You know, let me put this camera away. I have no idea I was breaking the law. And then these cops go on about their business, whether they're acting in good faith or not, but the citizen is intimidated from recording these cops, and that's the huge problem, because most of these cops know there's no law against it.
Carlos, let me ask you, though, I mean, here we've got, let me ask you about how police look at this. I've got online here a comment from a listener. He says, I'm a 24-year police veteran, live in Illinois, one of maybe the toughest laws on this in the country, which is a state that prosecutes citizens for recording a police officer, and he writes, It's online, so you judge. But I couldn't disagree more with this law. Any and every officer should behave as if they are always being recorded. The only reason to have a law like this is to protect officers who are acting way beyond the scope of the law. So there's a 24-year police vet who said, I don't want this law. You know, police shouldn't act this way. What's your experience, Carlos? Do you see police sharing his attitude or aggressively, you know, pushing back against the recording?
Well, cops, they would like the recordings if it shows them in a good light. And we have a lot of police departments in this country who are actually requiring officers to put on video cameras on their uniforms to protect themselves, you know, against people who accuse them of wrongdoing. And so the video camera protects the citizen and it protects the cop. And they're recording us. You know, when you get pulled over, they have a camera running on the dashboard. Anytime you walk around the streets, you're getting recorded. And you know, we record them for our own protection and for their protection. And like, you know, like they always tell us, if we have nothing to hide, then we should have nothing to worry about. And that's what we're telling them. If you have nothing to hide, don't worry about it. We're not talking about interfering with your investigation. We're not trying to get in your way. We'll just stand back and record you. All these people that I write about are people, the video always shows that, they're people who are standing from a respectable distance and they're recording the officers. And then the cops end up coming over to them and arresting them and harassing them. And while the cops just ignore them.
Dennis Slocum, Carlos Miller is in Miami. We played the tape earlier of this Memorial Day shooting in Miami that was recorded. I mean, you heard that huge fusillade of bullets there, and the citizen there who ultimately says he, you know, had the police pistol to his head, taking the cell phone away, him saying, that guy's going to die, going to die. Here's a reaction online, and I'd just like to get your reaction. But Bill says online, he says, that police shooting in Miami was a public execution. Nothing will be done. The police will high-five each other about a good shot. The only defense we have is people filming the police. Now, that's Bill writes that online, Mr. Slocum.
Mm-hmm.
And how do you, what are you hearing that? Is that your 20-second vignette that we shouldn't judge from? Or, you know, is that the kind of thing that we should at least see and be able to think about?
I think it's perfectly fine to tape police officers in public. Now, again, yeah, that is a 20-second vignette. If you see the shooting, I don't know. I'm not familiar with the shooting in Miami that you're referring to, but no shooting or no use of force is nice to look at. But I think it has to be viewed by what precipitated the shooting. What was in the officer's mind when they pulled the trigger? And I don't know that you can get that from a videotape. But that's not to say that I think they ought to be outlawed. I mean, if you're a public employee working in a public arena, you're probably being videotaped about half the time anyway. Yeah. Most parking lots and liquor stores and you name it have got videotapes. I worked a detective unit, and one of the first things we would do when we had an extortion or some sort of situation like that was see where the videotapes might be.
You know, we're going to look at the legal issues here with the legal scholar in just a moment. Radley Balco, let me ask you, we've got another listener online, says the police have become quick to shoot in this country. Is that part of what's going on here, Radley, or does that take it too far?
You know, I don't know that that's true. I think if you look at police-involved shootings, statistics are what we have, and it's hard to get data on that. But they're actually down along with crime in general over the last 25 years. But, you know, that doesn't mean that it's not a good idea or it's not good that we have more accountability and more transparency. But just if I can make just a couple quick points. One
yes.
is on the New Haven video that you played the audio from just a minute ago.
Father Manship, the priest.
That's right. Mm-hmm. Something important happens in that video, which you heard twice. The police officer asks him why he's holding a camera.
Yeah.
Now, in the police report, they confiscated the camera, and they say in the police report that they – the reason they asked him to put it down is because they thought it could be a gun. They weren't sure what he had. It could be a gun. Now, in the video, you clearly hear them say, please put down the camera twice. Mm-hmm. So here's a case, and Carlos can document several more of these cases, where the video clearly contradicts the police report. And I think that's one very important reason why this right needs to be preserved. The other point I wanted to make is that you know, it's problematic enough if when police officers don't know the law. Citizens are expected to know the law. If you record a police officer
right.
in Illinois and you get arrested, you can't say, I didn't know it was illegal.
Mm-hmm.
But in these states where the police are arresting people in contravention of state law, they don't know the law, and they're not being held accountable for not knowing the law. And in some cases, people are, you know, being taken to jail for this. The final point I wanted to make is the other thing is here, you know, it's one thing to not know the law, but it's another thing, as we saw in Miami and we've seen in lots of other cases, where police confiscate cameras and then delete the video that the citizen was taken, or they try to destroy the camera. Now, every police officer knows that that's illegal. I mean, you're destroying evidence. Either the videotaping was illegal, in which case you're destroying evidence of a criminal act, or the arrest was illegal, in which case you're destroying evidence, you know, for a possible civil suit. And again, in these cases, even when someone in the police department deletes these videos or just tries to destroy one of these cameras, there's very, very rarely any disciplinary action. And that, to me, is much, much more troubling than police officers perhaps not knowing the law.
We've got a listener writing in here saying, I spent a year as a deputy sheriff. These are just people. One difference, they've got the power of life and death over us. Keep the cameras rolling. Radley, tell us the story of Tiawanda Moore. This is a Chicago case with a little different twist to it. There weren't bullets flying, but she pulled out her camera and got in trouble for it. Tell us that story.
Sure. Ms. Moore and her boyfriend were in a domestic dispute. Someone called the police. The police arrived. They separated the two. And one officer interviewed Ms. Moore alone in a bedroom in the house.
She's 20 years old, a former stripper, the report says.
That's correct. According to Ms. Moore and her attorney, that officer then came on to her, groped her breast, and gave her his home phone number or a landline phone number. She and her boyfriend then went to the Chicago police station to report, this sexual assault. And she was sent to the Internal Affairs Department. And according to Ms. Moore, she was rebuffed. They tried to talk her out of filing a police report. They intimidated her. This is her account, of course. And mm-hmm. in the course of that, at some point, she reached into her purse and started recording the conversation on her BlackBerry because she wanted to be able to report that this had happened.
Yeah.
They discover that she's recording the conversation. This, again, is in violation of Illinois law. So she was arrested, and she's now looking at a felony charge that carries 4 to 15 years in prison. Now, the kind of scary thing about that is if this particular police officer had actually raped her, he would basically be facing the same sentence that she's now facing.
If he had. There's no charge of that, but just hypothetically, just to get the sense of scale of that potential sentence.
Sure, yes. I'm not implying that even she's only saying that he groped her breast. But the point here is that recording the police officer, in this case, she thought she was protecting herself, carries a very, very severe sentence. And, you know, there's written about another guy, Michael Allison, who thought he was being harassed by police. He's facing 6 counts, which means he's looking at up to 75 years in prison for recording police, and in his case, also a judge.
I want to get a legal view on this. First, a couple of our listeners, a lot waiting to come in here. Rachel in Shelburne, Vermont. Rachel, thanks for calling. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for taking my call.
Yeah.
I'm calling. I have two stories. One involves when I wish I had had my cell phone camera out, and one when I did. The first, my friend was being arrested for public urination, and the police had him almost in cuffs, and they were screaming at him to stop resisting arrest. And he was yelling back at them, just tell me what to do, just tell me what to do. Please tell me what to do. And they would not tell him, and then he got a knee to the back. They practically dislocated his shoulder and hauled him off in the car.
Now, he broke the law, public urination presumably against the law, but you're saying way too rough for the offense? You wish you had had a camera?
Way too rough, and he was asking for instruction on what to do. He was not resisting arrest, and they were yelling at him, you know, stop resisting arrest.
What's your other story, Rachel?
My other story was I was parked on the street, and somebody had been pulled over for what looked like a routine pullover. The police officer pulled out their gun, approached the car. I took out my camera because this just looked really suspicious. And as soon as they saw that I had my camera, they stopped, put the gun back, approached the car, and had a conversation.
So instead of this involving a gun, it involved a conversation, and your camera, you think, had something to do with that.
I think so. And I don't even think it needs to be recording. As soon as you whip that thing out, everything just stops. And I think that if they were doing their job and they knew that they were doing it right, then they wouldn't worry about being recorded.
And what if you had done that in a state where that could get you felony charges?
You know, I didn't even know that that was a law anywhere. I assume that people had a right to videotape the law officers in action because our tax money pays for it.
Yeah, I think a lot of people share that assumption. Rachel, I appreciate your call. I want to get a legal view of this. Eugene Volokh joins us right now from Los Angeles. He's a professor at UCLA Law School, teaches constitutional criminal law, nationally recognized expert on the First Amendment, writes a law blog called The Volokh Conspiracy. The Volokh Conspiracy. Eugene Volokh, thank you very much for being with us.
Thanks for having me on.
So not everything always, not all lies, laws always line up with the Constitution, but what does the Constitution have to say about this, and has the Supreme Court ruled on it?
Well, the Supreme Court has not ruled on these particular laws, but more broadly, the Supreme Court has not explained what First Amendment protection there is for news gathering as opposed to dissemination of the news.
Is a citizen with a cell phone a news gatherer, whether they think of themselves that way or not?
Well, that one thing that is quite clear is that throughout American history, the freedom of the press was not seen as protecting institutional media any more than it protects anybody else. So, yeah, absolutely. A citizen who's gathering news for purposes of putting on his blog or passing along to news organizations or just talking about the next at the next city council meeting is just as much protected or as little protected by the First Amendment as is the institutional media.
But here we've got these stories, you know, pushback in Connecticut, in Chicago, woman facing maybe 15 years in prison when she thought she was being harassed. In Miami, a guy who says, you know, he had a gun put to his head and his cell phone smashed. So where's the Constitution?
It's a good question, and as I said, unfortunately, there is no clear answer from the Supreme Court. I think it'll probably take a clear answer from the Supreme Court for these practices to stop. But I think a good argument can be made that the First Amendment does protect news gathering. The Supreme Court has at times said that it protects it in some measure. It's just that the law on that is not at all clear. If you go and ask your lawyer what it is that you can say on your broadcast, he'll be pretty specific. And he'll say, setting aside some special rules having to do with vulgarities and such on broadcast, he'll say that you have virtually unlimited rights with only a very few exceptions. If you ask him about news gathering, he'll say, you know, it's complicated because the Supreme Court hasn't really spoken up. This having been said, I do think there's a very good argument. I think it would ultimately be a winning argument. And it's an argument that some lower courts have accepted, that video recording and audio recording, by the way, these laws ban basically audio recording. It's just that audio is often the most important part of this video. So that audio recording the police or others for that matter is very valuable in order to have something to say. If you want to communicate what happened, you need to be able to record what happened, that there's not any sufficient government interest in protecting the supposed privacy of police officers doing their public job in a public place.
Eugene Volokh, stand by there in L.A. if you would. Carlos Miller in Miami, I've just got you for half a minute more. Why is this important, Carlos?
To gather the news? Well, obviously, I mean, it's part of the First Amendment. It, even though it hasn't been ruled in the Supreme Court, it's been ruled by numerous lower courts that recording, you know, that documenting news in public, gathering news in public is protected for everybody, not just journalists who are on the payroll, but citizen journalists as well. So it's important for democracy. It's important for transparency.
And the frequency of this, of police pushing back against this, is it, you know, a rare thing in your experience, or is it going on a lot now?
It happens every day. Every day I get people emailing me stories of something going on every single day. I mean, I only write a fraction of what I see, but every day there's something going on. It's continually. It doesn't stop.
Radley Balco, Dennis Slocum, Eugene Volokh, please stand by. Carlos Miller with Photography is Not a Crime, his blog, with us in Miami, Florida. Thank you very much for joining us, Mr. Miller.
Thank you, Tom.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point, and we're talking this hour about the battle around the country over citizens videotaping of capturing on cell phone police at work and police pushing back, and sometimes pushing back pretty darn hard. Dennis Slocum is with us, 32-year-old veteran of the L.A. County Sheriff's Department, now vice president of the International Union of Police Associations, AFL-CIO. Radley Balco is with us. He covers this issue for the Huffington Post. He's written a lot about it. And from Los Angeles, Eugene Volokh is with us, professor at UCLA Law, a big expert in the First Amendment. We've got a lot of response online here. Cassie says, recording is the citizen's first line of defense against police who have unfortunately gone wrong and abused authority. Jamie, police have no problem being recorded. How many cop dramas show, you know, the cops and all this wild police chases? They do have a problem when being caught abusing their authority. James, people responding all over the world here. James says on Twitter, as a Middle East reporter, citizens reporting is defense of democracy, not a threat to it. Public servants' work is public. And Sarah says if those filming aren't interfering with the process, there's no reason to prevent them from recording. What's there to hide? Dennis Slocum, what about this issue of interference? That's the charge that sometimes, you know, gets put against somebody with a camera, interfering with an arrest. What about the danger of that, Dennis Slocum?
Well, the danger, of course, is if you get up in a policeman's face when he's trying to effect an arrest and he hasn't neutralized whatever situation he's dealing with, then you're subject to arrest yourself. I understand that, and I think most people do. Can I just interject?
Yes, please.
We're talking about daily occurrences of police getting involved negatively with people video recording. I would hazard, we got 800,000 policemen in this country, and 7 days a week, 24 hours a day, they're responding to
tough stuff.
Any kind of thing you can imagine, mm-hmm. And it's generally when reasonable people have no idea how to sort this situation out, they call a policeman and we send them a 25-year-old kid out there and he has to deal with it.
Right.
99.9% of the time, they deal with it successfully.
Mm-hmm.
And I would guess very frequently they're filmed, and most policemen I have, and obviously this is anecdotal, they don't have a problem with it. I mean, they may not like it, but they realize it's a reality, and whether you make laws or not, people have cell phones, and every 14-year-old kid has one, and most of them take video recordings. It's just a fact of life, and we need to deal with that. And I don't have any truck with people that say that public employees in a public place should be open to the scrutiny of the public. I've got no problem with that, and most police officers don't. And I would just say that for those that do and those that make bad decisions, I think it's a bad decision.
Randley Balco, the argument that's kind of implicit there, and Dennis Lookham's saying, look, fine, if it's the, you know, they're citizens, they pay the freight, let them film, but you know the pushback. But the argument there is, you know, it's a hard job, and it's not always going to be pretty. And if we go around, you know, videotaping, when it gets particularly difficult, it's not going to look nice. But that's, you know, 1% or 0.1% of the encounters out there. How does that strike you, Mr. Balco?
Well, I would agree with Officer Slocum that most police officers do you know, a fine job, and that most of the time these situations are resolved, you know, in a manner that's consistent with law and with policy. But I do think that the small percentage that do go wrong, it's important that citizens be able to protect themselves, not only protect themselves, but also have it keep the officers themselves transparent and accountable. You know, it is possible, obviously, that a video can be taken out of context, that a video could be edited. And you know that the consequences of that, it seems to me, are, you know, bad public relations, that people will see a video and have a hostile reaction to it after only seeing a portion of it and not seeing it in the proper context. It's hard for me to see there being legal consequences from that. You know, if the video has been edited, there are forensic video experts that can tell pretty easily that it has been edited. And of course, if a video has been taken, if a snippet of a video has been taken out of context, you know, if the matter comes to court or it comes to a disciplinary action against the officer, you know, they're going to provide that context. So, you know, it maybe is a public perception problem that some of these videos can be taken out of context. But I'll actually say, you know, I run a blog also that has a readership that you could say is pretty skeptical of police officers in general.
Okay.
And I posted a video once of a video that made the rounds in Seattle, or the video was from Seattle, made national rounds a few years ago, in which a police officer pretty severely beat a woman who was arresting. But in the video, you actually see the woman is being very, very resistant, showing, you know, a lot of attitude. And in one case, she strikes the officer a couple times, and was getting a very hostile reaction in some quarters. But in other quarters, you know, people who are normally very skeptical of police officers actually came to this officer's defense and said, hey, wait, I mean, in this video, this guy's He's got a lot of people around him. This woman's, you know, resisting. She assaults him a couple of times. He had to get the situation under control. So I think, you know, there are going to be people out there who are always looking to fault the police. But I think a lot of times these videos actually clear the officers. I've done lots of shows like this one where police officers have called in and said, I can tell you there's been a half dozen times when a citizen shot video has actually exonerated me of excessive force charges.
But it is interesting because once there's video, the police no longer has the same kind of sway over the narrative of what happened here, which typically they do. I mean, in courts, it may be true or false, but the police testimony has special weight. I guess that's tough when it goes up against a recording.
Exactly, and that's why I think it's important. I mean, as I said before, I mean, the police narrative has always been sort of given deference as the official narrative. And, Carlos Miller on his website every day documents cases where a police narrative is directly contradicted by video. I think that's a very small percentage of cases where this happens. But in the cases where it does happen, it's critical that there be a right preserved for people to provide that alternative, not completely objective, but certainly more objective narrative. Mm.
Let me get a call from Justin in Revere, Massachusetts. Justin, you're on the air. Thanks for calling.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
I don't really have an opinion one way or the other, but I'm a teacher, and I teach, and in other places I've heard that students are starting to record their teachers in school, and I'm wondering which this ends up being landed on as a federal law or something.
Justin, you're breaking up, but I think I got the gist of it. And let me put that to Eugene Volokh. You know, on the privacy front here, I mean, is every public employee going to be open game for filming now, Professor Volokh? There's Justin. He's a teacher. Can all 20 or heaven forfend 30 or I don't know how many of his students sit there with their cell phones filming him all through the class? He's a public employee.
Well, I think the answer is that there should be a First Amendment right to do that. Now, inside a school, there may be constraints imposed on a lot of First Amendment activity if it's likely to disrupt class and such. But every so often, for example, at UCLA, there was a group that was trying to get students to record their professors because they thought the professors were using the classroom to indoctrinate. And I thought it was kind of it was done in a way that I think was kind of disrespectful. Or at least the call for it happened. The video recording was never done, but the call was disrespectful to the educational process in various ways, just the way it was organized. But when professors were saying, "Oh, this is horrible! This is invading my privacy," my reaction was, "What kind of privacy do you have? You take the taxpayers' money in order to teach the taxpayers' children. It's not confidential classroom communications. You're up there in front of 100 students. You don't have a right to privacy. I don't have a right to privacy in that respect." But unfortunately, what happens is we're seeing with this the dark side of privacy. You look at the Massachusetts and Illinois laws; they were quite consciously designed as attempts to protect privacy. But this talk of privacy was so general, so lacking in any recognition that sometimes privacy is not the highest value, that as a result, it ended up, in the name of protecting privacy, ended up restricting scrutiny of public employees doing their public jobs. But if indeed the First Amendment arguments I outline are applied to recording police officers, I think they would ultimately be applied, and I think should be applied to other government employees doing their jobs. I don't see why any of us should have a reasonable expectation of privacy in how it is that we're doing the jobs that we're doing on the public dime, with a few exceptions, as undercover work and national security.
New times, new technology, all over the place. Gina in Columbia, South Carolina. Gina, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
Thank you for taking my call.
Yeah.
Love your show.
Thank you.
I feel that, you know, first of all, the police are public servants. Any public official is a public servant. They, for one, should be held to a higher standard. Secondly, I have no expectation of privacy. I'm probably recorded 100 times a day by county and state cameras, be it DOT cameras or security cameras at stores.
Yeah, you and everybody else. Mm-hmm.
Yes. So, you know, obviously I know if I do something stupid out on the street, chances are I'm going to get caught. Why should the police not be held to the same, you know, they're public servants. It actually should be held to a higher standard.
Gina, we've got it. Relly Balco, what are you seeing in response to that argument around the country? Are you seeing this privacy argument made frequently by police? Look, you have no right to do this. I guess it's implicit in some of these laws. You need consent from those you're filming. That, I guess that's speaking to privacy.
Yeah, the head of the Fraternal Order of Police, who I interviewed for the an article I wrote on this issue, basically made that exact argument. In fact, I think his quote was, "Police officers don't check their civil rights at the station house door," and actually, I think Professor Volokh would probably agree with me that they actually do check some of their civil rights at the station mm-hmm. house door. When you take a taxpayer check and you strap on a gun and a badge, there are certain rights that you give up in exchange for that responsibility and that power. But I will say, I mean, you know, Professor Volokh talked about the sort of legal situation in terms of what the courts have ruled. You know, there is a way to preserve this right or this ability, however you want to phrase it, you know, without waiting for the Supreme Court to rule on it. And that's the state legislatures or even Congress, probably it would be better at the state legislatures, could pass a law saying that there is, you know, unquestionably a right for citizens to record on-duty public officials. And, you know, I think a more important component to that law would also be an enforcement mechanism so that if a public official does violate that right, if they arrest you, confiscate your camera, you know, handcuff you, whatever, that you then have provided a path to, you know, for damages of some kind.
And there's some of that movement out there right now. I mean, I'm looking here, the news just a week ago in Connecticut, the state Senate passed a measure that would ensure the public's right to photograph or record officers as long as they don't allegedly obstruct officers' work and would give them a path to civil charges against an arresting officer, if that's what happened. A couple of callers here. Maria, Iowa City, Iowa. Maria, you're on.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
Yes, I am a citizen journalist, and we absolutely need citizen journalists. Without citizen journalists, we wouldn't have Boiling Frogs documentary, the largest street gang in America, which would not have been possible in Illinois because you can't. It's against the law to video police officers, which is interesting because, as we know, Illinois is one of the most corrupt states in the union, and there have been recorded instances of Chicago police abuse of citizens, and without the ability to video those instances, we wouldn't have any sort of controls at all. I talked to a young bicyclist who is selling coffee on Ragbri, this huge bicycle ride in Iowa every year, and he said he was in New Orleans filming a police officer, a black police officer, beating a black person in the street. And he was arrested. His camera was taken away from him. He was put in jail for 3 days. He was never charged. He was never tried. And when he got out, they gave him back his camera, and the film was gone.
Sounds like we need clear law protecting this, or you get that kind of situation. Maria, I appreciate your call. Let me squeeze one more in here. Omaha, Nebraska, Alston. Hi, Alston. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi. What do you think, Alston?
I also think it's a larger question. About access internationally to this technology, which triggers, you know, this whole awareness of what's actually happening on the street.
Mm-hmm.
So technology has sort of allowed us to be citizen journalists for the first time, really,
yes,
with our cell phones
mm-hmm.
and expose what is actually going on. Just look at Louisiana and look at Katrina and what happened down there.
Yep.
And so I think...
Or look at Syria, or look at Egypt. Mm-hmm. Yep.
Right, exactly. So it's a global question. And they better be careful because there are young people in the streets who want change. Is that going to happen here? Do we separate it out like that?
It is certainly a global question, a global technology, and it puts an eye on people who aren't necessarily used to having that recording eye on them. Eugene Volokh, how do we sort this out? It's so much state by state now. That seems awkward in a time when the technology is universal, the capacity is universal to do this, but Americans may not know what they're up against in their particular state in the midst of some, you know, startling police situation when they've got their cell phone in their hand.
Well, we have two problems here. One problem is that in 48 states, some police officers, I'm sure not all or even majority, but some police officers don't know the law or know the law and they're deliberately ignoring it. That's a serious problem, but you can't pass a law to prohibit that. That's something that needs to be needs to involve enforcement of existing rules. I suppose you could strengthen those mm-hmm. rules, but that requires some disciplinary action within the police departments, perhaps triggered by elected officials. There's the other problems. In Massachusetts and Illinois, there are these laws that are bad laws. I think they're unconstitutional, but I agree entirely with Radley that the legislatures need to be pressed on this. Deval Patrick, the governor of Massachusetts, has certainly built himself as being supporter of civil liberties in many respects. I'm sure he has been. Where is he? Where is the party leadership in Massachusetts? It seems to me that that while it would be good to have a Supreme Court decision ultimately resolving this, perhaps one day we will. It seems to me that the best solution is for Massachusetts and Illinois state legislatures to step up and say this is something that is about both protecting both civil liberty and making sure the law is followed, because the police officers themselves have to be following the law. And that video recording police officers can help make sure that they're following the law.
Legislators there and citizens all over. Listeners, pay attention to the law in your state. If you don't like it, speak up about it. And I mean, we wish good luck to everybody here, but we are in the age of the citizen journalist, no question about it. Eugene Volokh at UCLA, thank you so much for being with us, Professor.
Very much my pleasure.
Dennis Slocum, thank you so much for joining us.
I appreciate the opportunity. Thank you.
And Radley Balko with the Huffington Post. Thank you, Radley. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.